From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, April 6, 2018. And on this day, we will continue our ongoing efforts to figure out what is going on with ranked choice voting in Maine and proficiency-based diploma standards under increased scrutiny. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
When a suspected case of child abuse or neglect in Maine is reported to the state, it's the state's job to decide whether to open an investigation. A year ago, the Maine Office of Child and Family Services started using a new tool to help caseworkers make these decisions. But some professionals who frequently report suspected abuse say they're worried the state is no longer investigating all the cases it should, leaving some kids in unsafe situations. Patty White has more.
In his job as a social worker at Eastern Maine Medical Center, Mark Moran and his team make about 200 calls a year to Child Protective Services to report cases of suspected abuse or neglect. Starting last fall, he says, they noticed a change.
We have seen less of the reports, fewer of the reports that we make be assigned for investigation by Child Protective Services.
His observation coincides with the state's implementation of a tool designed to help frontline caseworkers decide whether to open an investigation. It's called structured decision making. Moran says he's concerned that it's creating more false negatives in some cases, when in fact a child is actually in an unsafe situation.
And they are allowed to continue to remain in that unsafe circumstance. And so the consequence of that is that potentially kids are continually being hurt or perhaps killed in the most extreme of cases.
Structured decision making is a set of assessment tools that help caseworkers make decisions at important points in a child protection case. Currently, Maine is using the intake assessment tool and is in the process of implementing others. The model was developed by the National Council on Crime and Delinquency. CEO Kathy Clark says it uses sets of questions and statistical analysis to help caseworkers make consistent decisions when assessing very complicated situations.
It becomes really challenging to understand how to make sense of that information, how to sift out the noise. How do you know which pieces of information are most pertinent and relevant to the situation at hand and the particular family that person's working with in that moment?
Park stresses that these tools are not intended to be used as the sole deciding factor in deciding what action to take. Instead, they're meant to inform a caseworker's decision.
They're tools. They are tools. They are not the end-all be-all.
She says the training of caseworkers and ongoing support is critical to make sure the tools are used properly. The importance of training was also cited in a report about structured decision-making from the Los Angeles County Office of Child Protection. Executive Director Michael Nash says he did the evaluation after the death of an 11-year-old boy who had been locked in a closet for several years.
And the issue was that the department had investigated the family on a number of occasions prior to that.
Nash says caseworkers used structured decision-making to assess the likelihood of future harm to the boy, and the tool classified the family as high risk.
But according to the investigation done by the social worker or social workers, there were no sustainable allegations of abuse or neglect that they felt would require their intervention.
So caseworkers decided not to intervene in that case. In his evaluation of structured decision-making after the boy's death, Nash concluded that the tool should still be used, but that the Child Welfare Department has to ensure it's used correctly. In Maine, the acting director of the Office of Child and Family Services, Kirsten Capeless, says caseworkers here have received training.
We've found that caseworkers are feeling good about having a tool that they can use to help aid in making those decisions and creating that consistency across all of the caseworkers. It, I think, is a product that's beneficial to the best interests of children in Maine.
As with any tool like that, the devil is in the detail and the implementation.
Dr. Lawrence Ritchie is medical director of the Spurwink Child Abuse Program. He says the goal of using the tool to increase consistency is good, but...
We've not had an opportunity to vet the procedure. And so, you know, in essence, we're in the dark about whether it's working or not. And I would say that's still a big question.
The Office of Child and Family Services, meanwhile, is under scrutiny for how it handled the cases of two children who recently died from abuse. State officials would not say whether structured decision-making is a part of internal and external investigations. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
It was a chaotic week for those attempting to follow developments of Maine's ranked choice voting law, and it's still not clear how all this is going to shake out. We have brought in political correspondent Steve Missler for a Friday catch-up to get us up to date and tell us how we got here. Steve, earlier this week, a Superior Court judge ruled that state election officials have to continue implementing the ranked choice system for June primaries. But it sounds like Republicans in the legislature are challenging that ruling. Can you explain what happened and what we should be expecting?
Yeah, I'll try. So basically, Superior Court Judge Michaela Murphy issues the ruling saying that the Secretary of State must implement the ranked choice voting system. But on that very same day, she responded to a separate injunction filed by Republicans in the Maine Senate, who basically argue that the Secretary of State doesn't have the authority to implement the law. So here's the central tension that the court and possibly the Maine Supreme Court has to settle. So on one hand, Judge Murphy ruled that the state has to set up this system because time is running out before the June primary, and not setting it up will basically sow confusion and doubt among voters. On the other, she says Republicans have raised some very serious concerns that may be best handled by the Maine Supreme Court. Those two moves by Judge Murphy really seem at odds with one another, but there are some key things to consider. First, we don't know if Judge Murphy or the Supreme Court will grant the Senate Republicans standing. The Senate GOP may not even be able to have its complaint considered by the court, and there are a lot of reasons why that may not happen. First of all, Senate Republicans are largely acting alone here. It's not like the full legislature is trying to intervene here and demonstrating damages or harm that could happen as a result of the election. It's basically one half of the legislature. Now, setting aside the standing issue, there's also the very strong statement that Judge Murphy made in her ruling that the state has to implement this system unless or otherwise it's going to sow a lot of confusion. So if the Supreme Court is going to take this up and potentially rule on the Republicans' complaint, they would almost have to supersede her ruling. And I don't know what the precedent for that is, but it would seem to be rare, at least to me.
Okay, so all of this could be decided in the courts maybe now, maybe after the primaries, if the court doesn't take up the Republican injunction. Is that what's going to happen?
Right. So if the court doesn't grant Senate Republicans standing, then Murphy's original order to implement the law would basically stand. Unless, of course, someone else petitions the court, which is entirely possible at this point. I wouldn't rule anything out. The other scenario is that ranked choice voting is used in the June primary and one of the losing candidates challenges the results. That, too, could end up in court.
It looks often, I think, especially given the court challenge coming from the Senate Republicans, that it's Republicans who want to block ranked choice voting. Why is that? Is that true? And are Democrats actually behind this?
All right. So I think Republicans are more vocal about opposing ranked choice. Democrats say they support it, and they've been really vocal about, you know, criticizing Republicans for blocking implementation and everything else. But I don't know that that support among Democrats is unanimous. I mean, look, there have been many ranked choice voting proposals that have never made it out of the legislature. It wasn't just Republicans who opposed the system. Democrats were in power in some cases and also opposed it. That's why how we got ranked choice. It was done through a ballot initiative because neither party wanted to implement it or to pass a law that would implement it. And now there are a couple of reasons for this, I think. One of them is that it's new. It's a completely different way of running a campaign. And both of the major political parties have had a lot of success running under the current system. And lately, you could argue, and this might explain why Republicans are more out front, perhaps, in opposing it, they've had more success recently in statewide races, especially in races where there are more than two candidates and where an independent could split the left-leaning vote. That's what happened in 2010 and helped Governor Paul LePage get elected. Well, that dynamic isn't supposed to be in play in ranked choice voting because of how it works. And I suspect that that's why Democrats are coming around and maybe supporting it, because they don't want to see that vote splitting scenario play out in future statewide races.
Okay, well, I guess we'll see where this goes next week. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks, Nora.
The state's transition to proficiency-based high school diplomas is under increasing scrutiny from parents, educators, and now lawmakers. The State Department of Education is proposing a bill that it says would repeal pieces of the law and grant more flexibility to local districts. Robbie Feinberg has that story.
Ninth graders in Maine are set to be the first graduating class to receive proficiency-based diplomas. They'll have to meet standards in up to 8 subjects, including math, English, and science, in order to graduate. But the policy has been delayed in the past and questioned by key stakeholders. This session, lawmakers have heard proposals to delay the diplomas even further and to largely get rid of the graduation requirements. With a newly drafted bill, the State Department of Education says it wants to fix the law, but still hold schools accountable.
We think that our bill sets some very clear requirements for the diploma and go from there.
The department's Mary Payne says the new bill would repeal many of the requirements that are set to go into place in 3 years. Students would no longer need to be proficient in up to 8 content areas to graduate. Instead, they would only need to meet the state's 11th and 12th grade standards in 2 subjects, English and math. Students with disabilities, meanwhile, could be granted modifications if needed. Payne says she hopes that the new diploma, as proposed in the department's bill, would still set a statewide graduation standard. But she says it would grant more flexibility in how schools teach students and what they require of them.
And I think that a lot of the approach here is to make sure that we say, here's what the diploma means, and let's talk about how we get students there.
And the department's bill won't be the only change under consideration at the State House. Republican State Representative Heidi Sampson is putting forward a bill that would repeal the proficiency-based diplomas entirely. She says the proposal would give control back to teachers and schools.
The only way we can do that is bring it back to more of a local control place, where local control determines what's best for their kids.
A public hearing on both bills is scheduled for Monday, and policymakers are hoping to get testimony from an array of stakeholders, including teachers and parents. But the House and Senate will need to act quickly. The legislature is scheduled to adjourn in less than 2 weeks. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, April 6, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.